Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
This is Jim Masters. Doug Llewellyn is on assignment. Jim Masters here. We thank you very much for joining us. I am the other host on CUTV News Radio Live. We both host the shows and all the wonderful guests that we have here on the program. So we thank you very much for joining us, and we're very excited to welcome somebody who is joining us for the very first time here on CUTV News Radio Live. Dr. Ramzan Zakir is widely sought after interventional cardiologist and owner and director of the Heart and Vascular Institute of Central New Jersey. His specialty is complex cardiovascular intervention and determining the presence of blockages in his patients' arteries. This includes individuals that have chest pain and heart attacks, as well as patients that have pain when they walk and non-healing wounds as well. And when people get blockages and also have a wound in one of their extremities, they become dangerously at risk for an amputation. With their expert techniques, they're able to establish blood flow and save patients from having to face amputation and prevent any further trauma. It really is incredible, incredible work. Cardiovascular disease, including myocardial infarctions, stroke, and heart failure, remains the leading cause of death of millions of people all over the world. Is it possible to combat the deadly disease and prevent the loss of so many lives? Well, one exceptionally gifted doctor has helped thousands of people in his New Jersey clinic fund relief from their suffering while making remarkable strides in his field that deserve the highest honor. And that is Dr. Ramzan Zakir, as I mentioned, widely sought after interventional cardiologist and owner and director of the Heart and Vascular Institute of Central New Jersey. The doctor was drawn to the sciences early in his youth after completing the residency at the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, and he decided to use his unique skills to further advance the field of interventional cardiology. Dr. Zakir's practice is now one of the most highly regarded in the country, and he's able to skillfully perform procedures in an office-based setting as opposed to the hospital. Again, his specialty is complex cardiovascular intervention and determining the presence of blockages in a patient's arteries. This includes individuals that do have chest pain and heart attacks, as well as patients that have pain when they walk and those non-healing wounds, as we mentioned earlier. Now, although the number of people that have lost their lives to cardiovascular disease is staggering, the fact that there's many ways it can be prevented is amazing. Risk factors include, of course, smoking, high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes. Although genetics do play a significant role, Dr. Zakir cautions that leading an unhealthy lifestyle will put individuals at even higher risk for any type of cardiovascular disease. Living a healthy lifestyle is categorically essential to overall good health. He highly recommends the Mediterranean diet, which we've heard so much about, and it really is a premier way to eat. And that includes more fish and healthy fats, avocados, olive oil, and, of course, prevention of type 2 diabetes, making certain your cholesterol is where it should be and keeping your blood pressure low are all extreme effective techniques. He's had tremendous patients who have just really benefited from his expertise, and they were always on a search for advice and assistance of the kind that Dr. Zakir gives. He successfully alleviated severe pain for many people, and it really helps them regain quality of life. He's also extremely active in clinical research for complex coronary and endovascular interventions, and he's a reputable worldwide guest lecturer. It's our honor to welcome Dr. Ramzan Zakir to our show here exclusively on CUTV News Radio Live. Dr. Zakir, thank you very much for joining us here. It's a pleasure, and we welcome you to CUTV News Radio Live. Thanks so much for joining us. I know it's a busy, every day is a busy day for you, but thanks for taking time out of your day to join us today.
Thanks, Jim. It's a real honor and pleasure to be on board.
Oh, we appreciate it. Can you define for us an interventional cardiologist?
Yeah, Jim. So an interventional cardiologist, so we perform interventions percutaneously. Okay, that means so non-surgical, minimally invasive. We put a sheath into the artery, and through that sheath, then we're able to advance wires, advance devices to break up plaque, and deploy stents. And so this could be used, this percutaneous approach could be used the most commonly, obviously, is to treat patients who have coronary artery disease. So when patients come in with myocardial infarctions, when they come in with heart attacks, right, so the standard of care is those patients go straight to the cath lab, and we're able to put a sheath, you know, so I kind of, so another thing that I specialize in is transradial catheterization. So there's different areas where you could access. So by accessing the radial artery in the wrist, you're actually able to reduce complications significantly as opposed to femoral access in the groin. So for patients who come in with heart attacks, it's actually been showed if you have the procedure done through the wrist, your mortality is actually less. So I kind of pioneered that the radial program in Middlesex County, and it's much more widely used. So we put a little sheath through the wrist, and through there, we're able to put a catheter that goes to the heart. And then patients who come in with heart attack, they have no blood flow in the artery, able to put a wire, sometimes use a device to suck out the clot, and then deploy a stent to restore flow. So those are the cases that the most emergent that come in with an acute heart attack. That's how we, you know, an interventional cardiologist. So that's one component. And the other component is the peripheral vascular component. We're able to use that similar type of approach with sheaths and going into the artery and wires and devices to break up plaque, to treat blockages in the legs. And those patients suffer from severe debilitating pain when they walk. And that can lead to, in extreme cases, wounds or ulcers that puts them at risk of amputation. So we can use that same approach to open up blockages in the legs, similar into blockages in the arms in rare in cases, and in the neck as well, in the carotid arteries as well.
It's amazing work that you do, and I know it's ever-changing. Everything changes, the new techniques, the technology advancements, things of that nature. What initially inspired you to want to go into medicine, doctor, and pursue this field of health and healing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as, my parents, you know, it was kind of their dream to see me become a physician. I volunteered in the hospital. I really enjoyed the hospital setting. Some family members that were physicians were definitely great mentors. I got involved with basic science research during my undergrad, and, you know, always enjoyed the sciences. And that kind of solidified, decision to enter the field of medicine. Again, from a young age, just volunteering in the hospital, the ability to, you know, to help people, the satisfaction you get from that, I think is great. And to make that a full-time, to make it your job, that was kind of my dream.
That's terrific. Describe, if you can, we'll talk about a little bit, maybe the audience is experiencing this now, or they know somebody that is, some of the symptoms people experience when faced with blocked arteries and heart disease. I know there's a multitude of different symptoms, and sometimes, I guess, we can almost try to diagnose ourselves as we should not if we're getting any symptoms. Sometimes indigestion, acid reflux, all these different things sort of mimic certain things. Costochondritis, these other things. But what are some of the real symptoms when the arteries are blocked and there is heart disease that we really shouldn't ignore? I mean, we shouldn't ignore really any symptoms of any kind, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, and unfortunately, we see it all too often when patients, you know, start having the symptoms of a heart attack, and they think that they're too young, and what happens, they attribute it to other causes. They think they're having heartburn, and they delay coming to the hospital. I mean, the key thing is once you're having those symptoms, to really get attention immediately, because we know that's going to improve outcomes. The time the artery is blocked, the time we get it open, really plays a significant factor on long-term prognosis as far as, you know, how much heart function is lost. So the classic symptoms, you know, is described as a pressure, a squeezing pain. The most, you know, the textbook definition of angina is you kind of feel like an elephant is sitting on your chest. Now, not all patients present with that, but that's the classic. You can get sweaty, you can get diaphoretic. The pain could radiate to your jaw, that's very specific, or to your left arm. So those are the most classic symptoms that you're having a heart attack. However, sometimes the symptoms can be atypical. You know, and patients only, you know, present is that they have, they're short of breath when they exert themselves, and all of a sudden they feel gasping for air with exertion. So that's, you know, we call that, you know, anginal equivalence. Okay, is that when they don't, you know, some people just have like arm pain. So not everyone can present with the classic symptoms, but those are the most classic, you know, is the squeezing pressure on your chest, diaphoresis, meaning you get sweaty, and any pain radiating to your jaw or your arm. Those anyone experiencing any of those symptoms should call 911 immediately.
And is it different for men and for women in terms of those symptoms, or, you know, as far as where they're located and things of that nature, or is it pretty much universal for both?
Yeah, and that's a great question, Jim, because it's unfortunate that, you know, women often do not present with the more classic symptoms, and they also, more so than men, tend to ignore symptoms and present late. And, you know, that, you know, leads to, again, an adverse outcome. So which patients do not present with the most classic symptoms? So diabetics can present with more atypical symptoms and even have silent ischemia, elderly patients, and women.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. You know, just from my own personal edification, I have a friend who actually has a different blood pressure reading in his left arm. It's actually quite low, but then in his right arm, it's quite high. So the blood pressure readings in each arm completely different. One very low, one higher. Does that mean anything? Is that something that he should be watching and checking? And is that normal to have that?
No, it's definitely not normal to have a difference of more than 10 millimeters per mercury in the arm. So the first thing that comes into mind is that the subclavian artery, the artery that's in the chest, okay, that extends out to the axillary artery, which, you know, goes into the arm, and then that becomes the brachial artery, and then that goes into the radial and the ulnar artery. So a blockage in that subclavian artery, then you may not get a blood pressure. You may get a big blood pressure drop in that associated arm. So if there's a blockage in the left subclavian artery, that left arm blood pressure may be significantly lower than the right. So that's the first thing, most important thing to rule out.
That's really fascinating. Is it possible to prevent blocked arteries and heart disease? Of course, we know they're the lifestyle and cholesterol and diabetes and smoking and all and exercise are all part of that, right?
Right. I mean, there's a lot that we can do. Obviously, genetics plays a big role. So if you have a family history of coronary disease, and that's, you know, most definitions, if you have coronary heart disease diagnosed in a first degree family member and a male less than 55, you know, that tends to be, you know, you have a family history. And those patients are definitely predisposed to having coronary artery disease. But, you know, still there's a lot that we can do. You know, we know that keeping our cholesterol low And now we're learning that the lower that LDL, that bad cholesterol is, the better it is. So keeping that LDL, driving that down as low as possible, avoiding diabetes, if you're diabetic, having tight control over your diabetes, your blood pressure, keeping your blood pressure, under check, avoiding smoking. All those things can help reduce your chance of having cardiovascular disease. So again, from a young age, developing good, healthy habits, we know that, we talked about the touch base on the Mediterranean diet. So, basic dietary concepts that we know are beneficial are, having a diet that's high in fiber, eating, less red meat. We know that red meat is associated with a lot of adverse outcomes, diets rich in nuts. We know that fish is healthy. We know that the healthy fats, olive oil, avocados, tend to be healthy. Oatmeal, these things, whole grain type foods, tend to reduce cardiovascular risk. If you smoke, stop smoking. All these things could help reduce your chance of having cardiovascular disease.
So all the things that we've always heard about still are true to form. To live a healthy lifestyle, eat right, exercise, stay away from smoking and fatty diet, all the things that we've always heard still are true to form. Genetics plays a huge role, doesn't it? I mean, I've heard some people say, genetics, it doesn't mean anything. But actually, it really does. If you have a father and grandfathers or grandmothers, whatever it may be, and they have dealt with cardiovascular disease or they've even passed away of sudden heart attacks or whatever it may be, it's a pretty good, and around similar ages as well, that's a pretty good indicator that you need to be watching yourself.
Exactly. I mean, and it's unfortunate. Sometimes we see people with that strong family history who are eating poorly, smoking, and then it's like, what's going to happen. And then, unfortunately, you have the other case as well, that people who have that family history do everything right and still develop it, and they come to me, saying, with their hands up and, what could I do? It's unfortunate, we joke around, amongst ourselves, you got to pick your parents better and stuff like that, But, when you have that
case.
What's that?
Predisposition. Yeah, that predisposition, genetic predisposition. So when those people do come to you and they have their hands in the air like, I did everything right, I did everything I was supposed to do, but they are still developing it because of the genetic component, what do you say to them from there? What can they do? Is there anything that they can do if that's the case? The genetic thing takes over?
We reassure that, look, what you're doing is help minimizing it. If you weren't doing,
right,
what you're doing,
anything,
maintaining a healthy lifestyle, keeping your weight in check, keeping, your diet, doing all these things, it could be a lot worse, So, I think that's the conversation that we have with these patients, and just reassure them, to continue, doing everything that they're doing.
So you would need to be, everybody is pretty much what I'm understanding here from your conversation on the show is we all need to be proactive if there is genetics at hand and a predisposition to this or really any illness or medical condition. You have to be extra vigilant and extra proactive in that particular area where there is that strong family history, right? A little bit more proactive than even the average person.
You nailed it, Tim. That's exactly, that's exactly how we approach it.
So let's talk about your amazing clinic. Obviously the work that you're describing is really, really incredible, and we, take our hats off to you for it. What distinguishes your clinic, doctor, from others that are out there?
Right. So, our practice, so we cover both heart and vascular issues. So, obviously we do the bread and butter cardiology, with stress testing, echocardiograms, you know, carotid ultrasounds, duplexes. And, you know, so we do all that. We have that all in place. We have an amazing staff that I'm quite proud of. And then what we have is, I mean, the real expertise to treat the more complex cases. You know, a lot of these patients, you know, that may be, you know, told that there's nothing, you know, that can be done for their severe pain in their legs, or told that, you know, you have a non-healing wound, and they're told that, you know, you're going to, you know, an amputation is what you need. There's been plenty of cases where, you know, I've been able to intervene in those settings and, you know, change their, you know, fortunes for the better. Patients who have complex cardiac coronary anatomy, you know, where they're told that, you know, either nothing can be done or they definitely need a bypass, and a lot of times we're able to intervene successfully, you know, to improve their symptoms and avoid a bypass in certain situations, where, you know, obviously, you know, a bypass is a good procedure in a lot of patients, but, you know, if it can be done through a catheter approach and, you know, successfully, you know, there's a lot less recovery time and morbidity associated with it.
That's good news, right? It's good news to know that there are oftentimes these alternatives. What are some of the breakthrough medications that are currently available? Of course, we know about the Lipitors and the Crestors and the Zocors, the statins, blood pressure medications, different things that are revolutionary that are helping.
Right. So, I mean, the cornerstone of therapy is the statins, the Lipitors, the Crestors, right? So that's our bread and butter. All patients with cardiovascular disease are on them. You know, a fair amount of patients don't tolerate them due to myalgias and other conditions. And, you know, there's a new class of medications that's really, really taken off nicely. And they're called the PCSK9 inhibitors. Okay, and there are two medications. One is Repatha, the other is Praluent. And they're injectable medications that you can do twice a month or once a month. Now they have dosages and stuff. So, and they both have, you know, remarkable studies that came out in patients whose LDL cholesterol, the cholesterol wasn't terrible to begin with. And what it's shown is by reducing that cholesterol even further, from LDLs like, you know, 80, down to, if you drop it down to like 40, you're able to significantly reduce cardiovascular events. So that just tells us that, you know, where we accepted, you know, okay, the LDL is 100, the LDL is 90, you know, we're doing a good job for the patients. Now we know there's a lot more that we can do, and we have this new class of medications to help us get that LDL to where it needs to be, to where we're actually, you know, further improving our outcomes.
So that's exciting news to know that, too, that there is hope in that area. We talked about a little bit about the Mediterranean diet. What is it specifically about that diet that we hear so many wonderful things about, Doctor, and that you highly recommend?
Right. I mean, I think there's basic, you know, the concepts, right? We know that your transaturated fats, you know, need to be, you know, reduced, right? Fried food, all these things, you know, need to be on the low. The Mediterranean diet, I mean, there's no one definition of it, but it tends to, you know, consist of a diet that's high in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, nuts, seeds, we know are very healthy. Olive oil as an important source of your monounsaturated fats, you know, and, you know, you want to reduce your, again, there's very little red meat in the Mediterranean diet, and you have a high fish intake. You know, we know that fish has been very beneficial, the fatty fish. And so we've done, you know, there have been studies showing Mediterranean diet, you know, being associated with reduction in overall mortality, cardiovascular mortality, cancer incidence and mortality, incidence of Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease as well. Even some cancers as well, showing a significant reduction.
Amazing. Can you share maybe a success story or two with us, with some of your patients?
Absolutely. This is a case I just did last week was a, you know, a 62-year-old gentleman that had a strong smoking history and developed severe blockages in his legs, where he was told by several physicians that the only procedure would be a very complex bypass. And, you know, because his only symptom is that, you know, he actually can only walk. He can't even walk a quarter block. He's got to stop due to severe pain. He's a young person that wants to be active. And he was told the only thing that could be done is a complex bypass. And we would only do that if there would be, you know, if there was a wound or ulcer that's non-treating, because we know those long bypasses that don't tend to stay open very long. So he, you know, heard about me over the internet and researched me, came over, and we'd done an angiogram, and you know, I told him that it'd be complex, and you know, we'll do what we can. And so we went on the intervention. We were absolutely, you know, able to use some exciting technology and able to cross the blockages and get and restore flow to his legs. And this is for the first time in years, you know, seeing him back now, he's able to walk without pain. And it was a very emotional time for the patient and the patient's wife to finally be able to, you know, live a, you know, to restore a normal life, quality of life.
Yeah. So
that's one recent story. Another story is in the in the coronary arteries, a lady that's been suffering for you know, angina, and her artery had 100% blockage called a chronic total occlusion, and she was told by, you know, a physician, other physicians, that, you know, it's too risky to open up, the chance of opening up is really low, you know, we're just going to treat you with medications. They weren't doing it. A patient was still having chest pain, shortness of breath with minimal exertion. So a patient was, you know, referred over to me, and we were able to open up that 100% blockage, restore flow, and now, you know, the patient's doing great, able to walk without having any chest pain, no shortness of breath, quality of life significantly improved.
That's incredible. That's really, really hopeful and inspirational. What would you say is the ultimate mission of your clinic? I know that's sort of a generic question, but for you, doctor, I mean, you pun intended, you put your heart and soul in everything you do, and your staff and the team around you, you know, this is in your DNA. There's a reason why you're doing what you're doing. Is there an overall mission, obviously, to have people healthy and happy and live satisfying lives, but for you, being on the front lines as you are on a day-to-day basis, what would you say that ultimate mission is?
Right. I think the ultimate mission, you know, is to provide, you know, cutting-edge treatments, you know, for patients, you know, to be, you know, up to date, have the most advanced technology available and expertise to deliver, you know, the highest and best outcomes for patients, you know, to be a center that's recognized for that, where, you know, patients will go out of their way to get to for consultations and, you know, seek treatments. I think that's the you know, that's the ultimate goal.
What a goal to have, Dr. Here you really are, inspiration, and your team at the Heart and Vascular Institute of Central Jersey, Robert Wood Johnson Physician Enterprise, right there in New Brunswick, and you have other locations. You've expanded, right?
That's correct. We have another office in Edison, and we have an office in Monroe. So currently we have one other physician, Dr. Nahir Shah, who's with me, and we'll be slowly, we're looking to expand and bring other physicians into the practice.
I want to make mention, folks can learn more about your clinic and practice and amazing work at the Heart and Vascular Institute of Central Jersey by going to the website, www.njheart.com. That's H-E-A-R-T, of course, njheartandvascular.com. One more time, NJ, that's, of course, for New Jersey, njheartandvascular.com. Dr. Zakir, a real honor and a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for sharing all of this important and vital information with our audience. We've learned a lot, and hope we get a chance to chat with you again real soon, because it is such a relevant topic, an important topic that affects all of our lives. Thanks for being with us on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You are very, very welcome. And thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this show, everybody, a vital and important one. It certainly is with Dr. Zonkis here. Jim Masters, CUTV News Radio. For all of us here, we say thank you for tuning in. And stay tuned. More great episodes of CUTV News Radio Live coming right up, right here. But for now, have a great day.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.